Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, world, and welcome to the Shannon Joy Show. We're broadcasting from the Joy Virtual Studio in the beautiful Finger Lakes region of New York State. It is Tuesday. I am so glad to be with all of you tonight. In the Joy Virtual Studio with me is a very, very special guest. You've all heard of Dr. Robert Malone, one of the co-inventors of the mRNA technology, a very early whistleblower about the safety and efficacy of these mRNA vaccines. And he has been really the tip of the spear of the health freedom movement that has taken off across the United States of America and also the world. But you probably haven't met the other Dr. Robert Malone, the woman behind the man. I am so pleased to introduce you to Dr. Jill Glasspool Malone. She has been behind Robert Malone in many ways since the beginning of their career. They were high school sweethearts. She is a specialist in preclinical regulatory and clinical project management with a special expertise in public policy. She has a resume as impressive and as long as Dr. Malone's. And really, she's an expert in her own right in so many of these topics, and also writes regularly for the Substack, who is Dr. Malone. It's so wonderful to meet you. Is it okay if I call you Jill? You mentioned you're
yes.
Okay. Welcome to TNT, girl. I'm glad to have you in the studio.
Good to be here.
So let's just start here. We're going to talk tonight about transhumanism. Jill Malone is an expert in this topic. Two very, very important pieces that I will direct you to in the Who is Dr. Malone Substack. It is The Future is Now, and Human Cyborgs Are Just the Beginning. Very lengthy exposés written by Dr. Jill Malone about transhumanism, which is frankly one of the more terrifying elements of the Great Reset and the New World Order as envisioned by these just narcissistic, psychopathic elites that just want to own everything, right, Jill? So you've done a lot of work on this, and we're going to get into your research so that people understand how truly prolific this idea about transhumanism is among elites and among government entities across the globe. But first, I want to ask you just a personal question. What is it like to be the woman behind Dr. Robert Malone? We see him out there. We see a lot of his work. And it was so exciting for me to see that really you have partnered with him in so many ways in this work, that you've been right there beside him, not just in 2020, but in the years preceding that. What has the experience been like?
So for the last year and a half, it has been basically extremely busy.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of angst as to what's happening, but there's also been an upside, and that is the writing, the learning, the exploration of new ideas like the transhumanism and what that means for society. My PhD was very public policy centered. So coming back to my roots. And it has been a growth period, I think, for both Robert and I. I mean, it has not been all bad, and there has been a lot of bad. I mean, it's really not fun when you're censored. And for me, that really started in March of 2020. In January, we got an early signal about this virus, and I started putting together everything I could on it and how to prepare. And so I started writing a book, and I wrote a book. I put it out in 6 weeks. It was actually quite scientifically correct. It was detailed. It was how to stockpile, what could happen. I discussed masks. I discussed the virus. I discussed the policy, the WHO, what was happening. Robert wrote it with me. We put it out on, I believe, February 15th, something like that.
Wow.
And as I was doing this and following, then we started to see Washington Post articles and LA Times articles that the White House and the WHO were meeting with big tech on how to censor. And then by mid to late March, Amazon pulled the book. I self-published it. It was actually doing quite well. And they pulled it off. And they would never give me or Robert a reason why. All they would say, and they have a policy about how they'll meet with you, how they'll tell you why, blah, blah, blah. All they'd say is it went against community standards. Now, at the time, one of the things, because this is early in 2020, is I really rigorously went through the mask literature in the peer review. And what I came to is that this little surgical mask probably wouldn't do much, but if somebody wanted to wear them, fine. But the surgical mask, if worn properly, might have an impact. And at the time, if you remember, there's a shortage, and Fauci was saying that the mask would, none of the masks would do anything, right? His big lie, one of his big lies. Because he didn't basically, rather than telling people not to wear them because there was a shortage, he lied about it and said, well, they won't work, right?
Right.
We believe to this day that was probably why the book was pulled, but that was our first experience with the evil censorship that has gone on.
Yeah.
So it started early.
Well, and it was the Dark Horse podcast with Steve Kirsch and Brett Weinstein. Yes. I think this was what kind of blew the lid off. It really, Dr. Malone was the first really credentialed, very well established, you know, as a co-founder.
And that was pulled because of ivermectin. And ivermectin is, you know, I can't say whether it's safer than aspirin or as safe as aspirin, but it is a darn safe drug. I mean, if we all decided to take ivermectin for whatever reason, you know, it wouldn't affect much health-wise. So the government was so obsessed with ivermectin. Ivermectin was just crazy. There was absolutely no reason for it, except for if it did work, it would interfere with their emergency use authorization for the vaccine. And that is sick.
Absolutely.
And that was why that was censored. You know, again,
right?
Evil.
There was so much evil. And you know, the ivermectin, if used prophylactic, you know, if people knew that they could use it as a prophylaxis, if they knew they could use it for early treatment, it could have reduced the amount of people who are hospitalized, the amount of people who were put on ventilators and on remdesivir, which we now know was a kill protocol. I mean, so much in terms of crimes against humanity, when you think of the scope of the lies, and even now as we are seeing documentation, whistleblowers coming out essentially with the paperwork, with the proof that indeed COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-19 virus was created in a lab. It was funded by the NIH. It came out of Wuhan. It's just mind blowing.
But you know, for us, we think that the American public knows this. So last weekend, we did a speaking event, Robert did, in Las Vegas with Candace Owens. Mm. And Candace Owens asked the audience, which was millennials, Gen Xers, professionals in the financial industry. She said, who has heard of the Great Barrington Declaration? Maybe six people raised their hand, and two of them were Robert and I.
Wow.
This was in an audience of 600 people.
Wow.
Okay. So for those that are in the resistance who are there, we're all there. We know this stuff. But the vast majority of people still have no idea about the censorship, the defamation, and about the policies and even the adverse events of these vaccines. I mean, it's starting to break through. Obviously, people aren't running to get their boosters, but or vaccinate their babies, but thank goodness. But we still have a long way to go in getting the history of this to the world of what has happened.
I agree. I'm thankful for Brownstone Institute, our good friend Jeffrey Tucker over there. They will never forget. They're on this like a dog on a bone. And I agree with you in terms of public sentiment. You are absolutely correct. I think most people don't know about the Great Barrington Declaration. They don't know about the origin story of SARS-CoV-2. They don't know about the truth regarding the vaccines and the data and the VAERS reporting. But there is definitely something in the mind and the heart of the average American that is keeping them from going out to get the next recommended booster.
Yes. And I think there's also a cognitive dissonance you know, if our government funded the research to create this vaccine, which I believe they did, we don't have the absolute proof, but I think most of us are there. The virus, sorry, not the vaccine.
Right. Well, they're both the same, right? No. I'm not going to go there.
If they created this virus, they are responsible for millions of deaths.
Yeah.
Okay. Our government is responsible for millions of deaths, and there should be a worldwide investigation about this that is not happening. Mm-hmm. And so when people think about that, I don't think they're really thinking about what it actually means that our government may have made this virus. It's not a pretty picture. History isn't going to judge us well.
You certainly have to. It's a big pill to swallow, right? And it requires necessarily that you take a fresh look at all of your preconceived ideas and all of the histories that we've been told. And that's not to say that this isn't a beautiful country with an amazing founding and brilliant documents, right? Our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence and our Bill of Rights, founded on those Judeo-Christian values, right? But at the same time, man, we have just gone bananas. We've passed 30 years. We've just gone down this rabbit hole. And I think now as the globalists are really pressing the pedal to the metal, they're accelerating whatever it is they plan for humanity in the 21st century, which I think most of us believe is global governance, a totalitarianism, a fascism, yes, a technocracy that has elements of this transhumanism in it. As they press that and they accelerate that, I think it has the impact of forcing people to like, whoa, what's going on here? Like we've lost control of something. And I agree with you. Most people aren't quite there yet. They're not ready yet to kind of digest all of that. Right.
I don't think they're ready. But I think this is why, and I think that the our government is memory holding as much of this as they can. Things are disappearing off the internet. You know, the Wayback Machine now, anything, for instance, is anti-vax. They are taking off the Wayback Machine.
Wow.
So they are doing whatever they can to hide this, which is why we cannot stop speaking out or it will happen again.
Absolutely.
You know, the American public and the world has to understand that gain of function research is not okay anywhere in the world. It has to stop. And we need to the Biological Weapons Convention, which is extremely weak, needs to be redone.
Yeah.
Because and the only way it's going to happen is if we confront the past and what has happened.
Yeah.
Already.
Tonight, we are talking, guys, to the other Dr. Malone. She is Dr. Jill Malone, the wife and better half. No, don't tell him I said that. The woman behind the man behind and partnered with Dr. Robert Malone. Much of the writing and the research that you see on a daily basis on Dr. Malone's Substack, this is Jill. It is her research.
And well, just to say it though, there is not an article that we don't both touch.
So interesting. I love it.
Yeah, no, we never, you know, I'll write something, but then Robert will heavily edit. When he writes, I at least look at it. I think he's a better writer and editor than me, frankly, but.
Well, it's a beautiful collaboration.
Besides that, We both have our fingers on every single article.
Yeah. We're going to discuss this and more when we come back. We're going to go to quick break right here on TNT. We're going to get into it. We're going to slap transhumanism on the kitchen table. We're going to try to help you understand it, understand the scope of transhumanism in the 21st century, but also, you know, look at it from a perspective of, you know, it doesn't have to be this way, right? It's not inevitable. There are going to be good things about technology and bad things about technology, but there is something that we can do. So this is not meant to terrify you, though it will in the first couple of segments. As we wrap up the interview, hopefully we'll get you to a place of empowerment and understanding, I think, is the first key to that. We will be back in a moment right here on TNT with Dr. Jill Malone.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
German wealth depended to a large extent on this cheap energy that Germany got since at least the 60s, 70s from Russia while producing high quality material. So increasing from raw material to elaborated material. That is the foundation of the German economic miracle. 30% of the energy consumption they needed from Russia was always a thorn in the side of the Americans. So what we have now is that, for example, our Minister of Defense, Mrs. Lamprecht, said that Germany needs to take a more important role internationally. It should become a world power. And on the other hand, when they needed to be decisive in the Minsk agreements, they did nothing. There was no intention to press Ukraine into obeying the agreement. They bombed and shelled Donetsk, Luhansk for 8 years, and Germany did nothing really. They were not capable or not willing. I don't know.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The Great Reset began in the 1930s? Oh, yes. Franklin Delano Roosevelt's key advisor laid out a primitive version of the Great Reset.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
Stuart Chase, a key advisor to former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, envisioned an early version of the Great Reset in the 1930s and 40s. Chase envisioned what he called government control of energy resources, hydroelectric power, coal, petroleum, natural gas, the control of transportation, railway, highway, airway, waterway, and the control of agricultural production. Chase was so enamored with government control of every aspect of our lives that he even looked up to fondly the Soviet Union. At the end of his 1932 book, A New Deal, Stuart Chase asked, quote, "Why should the Soviets have all the fun remaking the world?" unquote. Well, we could update that to the year 2022 and ask, "Why should the Chinese have all the fun remaking the world?" as the once free West now is copying the social credit type system of China and limiting freedom for millions. For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
It's never a burden to fight for what's right. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I am Shannon Joy, joined by the amazing Dr. Jill Malone. She's the wife of Dr. Robert Malone. They collaborate on so much of what he has written and said over the past 3 years. In fact, for many, many, many years, they were high school sweethearts, which I think is just so adorable. And you have horses and you live on a farm out in Virginia. And I just think it's really cool. I love this husband-wife story of collaboration. And I think it's really powerful that the two of you work together and work off of each other and challenge each other. I think a lot of husband-wife teams, I can attest with my husband, they've been tested and challenged in the past 3 years. And it looks like you guys are just creating some phenomenal work. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it. Transhumanism is the topic of the day on the Shannon Joy Show. And Jill, let's start with the origin story of transhumanism. Very important piece that you wrote on Malone Substack entitled The Future Is Now. And you feature a really interesting, fascinating interview in 1958 between Mike Wallace and Aldous Huxley, the author of A Brave New World. And you move through where did transhumanism come from? If everything that we've learned over the past 3 years seems slightly fascistic and reminiscent of the early 20th century and the elite's obsession with eugenics, well, it might be precisely because transhumanism and the merging of human and machine, this philosophy was indeed rooted in eugenics. And Huxley had a front row seat to all of this. Fascinating. Yes. Can you tell us about it?
Absolutely fascinating. So I delved into Aldous Huxley, and his grandfather was a partner with Charles Darwin, and he started the eugenics movement in Great Britain. He was actually called Darwin's bulldog. Fast forward, his father was a biographer who wrote about eugenics, who wrote about his grandfather. And then Aldous Huxley's brother, Julian Huxley, founded UNESCO, which is the education and science arm of the UN in 1946. And he wrote the original charter. And in that original charter, he writes both about eugenics, and he wrote about needing, as the world population grew, that they would need a one world government. And that was actually in the original charter of UNESCO, which is darn scary. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then his other brother was a biophysicist and did a lot with nerve regeneration. And the ideas behind a lot of Aldous Huxley's writings, both fiction and nonfiction, they come from what his family was doing. It was pretty incredible.
It's interesting that when you think about what Huxley was writing, it wasn't just the dream of a fellow who was a little paranoid about where things could go. I mean, this was a reality that he was exposed to,
yes,
within his own family.
Yes.
And his writing and what he warned of was really a warning to, I think, the world that,
yes,
people have a lot of money, they have a lot of power, they have a God complex, and they're going to try to do this. And this is,
yes,
you have to understand, because,
yes,
most people look at that writing, you know, Orwell was influenced,
right,
by Huxley, and you,
right,
you look at something like A Brave New World.
And Orwell was
right.
Yes. Huxley was a mentor of his. And in fact, yeah. And in that 1958 interview, you know, he talks about overpopulation. He talks about eugenics. He talks about, that because of overpopulation, the governments are going to become more chaotic. And so we're going to need a one world government, which he thinks is a kind of a really bad idea. And the only way that he could, which is where we're at now. I mean, it's still the same solution. And it's kind of fascinating.
I want to go back for a minute because we just had a slight glitch there. You said the only solution in the mind of Huxley in this interview with Mike Wallace from 1958 was what?
Decentralization.
Okay.
The idea that rather than build a centralized government, we actually have to take control back and build smaller governments.
And I think that that's a knee jerk, right? So when you have this big, scary New World Order, people like, you know, Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, and it's super powerful, people tend to think, oh, we need something as big and as mean and as powerful to
go
up against
it. The thing is, so when I read, for instance, Julian Huxley's UNESCO charter, and he talked about needing a one world government, nobody said, well, gosh, we need the 1,000 largest companies in the world to run it.
Right.
I mean, this has already been taken over from this idea that we need to have a centralized world government as we get more and more people, which actually doesn't kind of make sense. I mean, the whole logic there kind of breaks down. Why is it as we grow bigger, we need only one government, not more governments, right? I mean,
right.
But taking that aside, they have taken this kind of naive idea, and that is the transnational corporations of the world, and said, yes, and of course, we're the perfect people to run it, which is really fascist.
Right.
Oh, there's my dog,
right,
knocking everything over.
No, that's okay. No, it is. It is bottom line fascism. And it really is. It's funny, the juxtaposition, because in one sense, you look at this apparatus and it is powerful, and they have enormous amounts of money and power. And the science and technology is advanced in some way.
Yes.
But on the other hand, it's almost a little clunky. Like the guy, you know, I go back to what I call the fallacy of inevitability, right? And you often get this from sciencey people and tech
right.
people who think that that they know everything about the future, right? And I always go back to the ancient Babylonians, right?
Right, right.
And they had too much money and too much time and God complexes. And I bet they really, 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 really thought they could build a tower to the heavens and become gods themselves. Like they believed it. But nature's God has a way of just kind of smashing that down. And so you have both things at play here.
Right. So, and there's this thing about science where it's like, honestly, just because you can do it, should you do it? Mm-hmm. And there have been very few examples where they haven't done something they could do. I could think of a few. I could think of, and this sounds horrible, but the technology there is, for instance, body head transplants. Mm-hmm. But nobody has gone there, at least not that we're aware of. I've heard rumors in China, but they're rumors. Certainly it's been experimented with in animals, but so there are some places we haven't gone.
Right.
And, well, and with transhumanism, that's the question is where, just because we can do it, should we do it?
When we come back, we're going to look at that question and we are going to look specifically at transhumanism. What is it and how is it manifested today in our culture, despite what many of you think? Government agencies have been at this for a very long time, and it is somewhat terrifying. And there needs to be a national and a global discussion and a local discussion, right, among people about this topic. We'll be back with Dr. Jill Malone in a moment right here on TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Heavy rain and winds are set to batter parts of the UK, with temperatures set to fall to 6 degrees overnight as they expect winds of almost 50 miles per hour to strike Brighton and Scotland on Friday. 200 UK scientists and doctors have signed a petition asking the government to pause the child COVID vaccine campaign. A judge in Spain has ordered the pop star Shakira to go on trial for tax fraud. She could get up to 8 years in prison.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dr. Jill Malone joins me tonight on the Shannon Joy Show for a deep dive into transhumanism. It is terrifying, frankly, to conceive of what some of our government agencies and corporations are up to. And some of it is downright unethical and evil. It doesn't mean that all of it is, and that's what we're trying to parse out here today. Very important piece at Dr. Malone's Substack, which Jill frequently writes for and contributes to. And the title here, it's 10 pages written out, very important piece. I would recommend everyone reads this. Human cyborgs are just the beginning. You did a deep dive into this concept of transhumanism. What is it? And where is it? What are they working on? And you found an enormous amount. Why don't you?
So the first thing I found, which just kind of blew my mind almost a year ago, was a report out of the UK Ministry of Defense and the German government called Human Augmentation. I want to say it was Human Augmentation, A New Paradigm, which is about a 100-page report in which they lay out the need for human augmentation for the military purposes, okay? And the first thing they say almost right off the bat is they talk about the ethics, and they say it doesn't matter what bioethicists or the public thinks. Other countries are doing this. If we don't do this, we're putting our people at danger. And so therefore we have to proceed with these research programs, okay?
Isn't that what they said about gain of function and weaponizing viruses?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is, and even after they weren't allowed to do gain of function, they still did it because for that very reason, that's the reason they give. So they started off with that, and they go through, you know, talking about genetic engineering. They talk about, stem cell therapies, about brain implants, about mechanical hardware, you know, to make you stronger. That's where you've got a brain implant so that it's being controlled. there's a lot of technologies out there. And they also say in this report something really interesting. And they say that, you know, human evolution has taken millions of years, and they believe that human augmentation is going to speed up human evolution by a huge number of, you know, just it's gonna make the shorten the time of human evolution as we do these genetic engineering, genetic manipulation combined with brain implants, et cetera. It is a frightening report. So I went from there. I wrote that about that, I guess about 8 or 9 months ago. And then I wrote what you found. So then I came back to the subject, and this was, I was just this niggling idea, what is our government doing? So I started searching around the internet looking for real sources. You know, I'm not looking for whatever, you know, conspiracy theory. And there's actually a lot out there. You can go to DARPA, which is a branch of the military, and it's their experimental branch. And you can see that everything I just listed, they're doing work on. I mean, they are funded programs. There was an announcement in 2015 for the Office for Human Cyborgs. That's, you know, that was a slang, but it was a biotech office. It's basically its job is human augmentation.
Well, yeah, just so it's
transhumanism for military purposes. Now, I'll say something. When you go to DARPA and you look at the grants and contracts that have been awarded, a lot of them will put this in nice, soft, fluffy terms around the disabled veteran. You know, they're doing spinal cord work, you know, for the disabled veteran. But then they always have and in the future, this could be a valuable tool for the warfighter. So they like to use the research and couch it for the public in terms of doing something for the veteran. But when you actually read the top level documents, it's less about the veteran and more about the warfighter.
Mm. Well, even in this piece, it's Defense One. You went as far back as 2014, so that the audience can understand. Yeah. I mean, this has been in play for quite some time.
Yes.
mRNA, the genetic manipulations that they're seeking, you know, infusing vaccines with technology is part
of it. And our military is particularly enamored with the neuro element, the brain implants.
Well, you mentioned in the piece,
even to the point where they're developing new silicon products for these implants, you know, they're new products that are, you know, not going to be able to stay in the body for a longer time that our body won't react to. I mean, they are deep in this research.
Absolutely. Well, this is from Defense One, April 2014. And the headline is Inside the Military's New Office for Cyborgs. I mean, they use the word.
Cyborg. Now they use that, and they haven't used it since. I think they got the message that they probably shouldn't.
Not great for marketing.
Yeah. And you do have to wonder, and I'll just say this, because we know that our military funds product placements in movies.
Oh, sure. You know, I always wonder about that.
I am just fascinated with the Marvel movies, like how much of Iron Man is being, you know, how much of that product placement is coming from our government. I just have to wonder. I have no proof. I have no evidence, but but my mind went there.
It is astounding. I mean, so you went through, I mean, articles from 2014 from Defense One, from 2018 from DevCom, CBC, the headline, Researchers Help Department of Defense Consider the Challenges of Human Enhancement, they call it, right? 2012, the Defense Post, Human Augmentation is Imperative. So they walk back from the cyborg and the creepy stuff. And they always, like, to your point, this is a nice fluffy story about how we're going to help veterans who were injured in wars. We're going to help them with prosthetic legs.
We need brain implants so that they can move their prosthetic. But then in the next second, they're talking about how we need brain implants to move the drone or the remote robotic equipment.
That was a fascinating element in this story, that it was another story talking about the technology that would enable a commander or general with an implanted chip in his brain to command an army of drones.
Yes, and also this talk to each other. Talking about there's
mental telepathy
project in there where they're looking at implants so people can talk to each other over long distances. I mean, this is scary stuff. And then, you know, our government in their stuff, I did not find very much. Well, no, there was stuff about genetic engineering. There was stuff about how to protect the warfighter from having genetic engineering done without their knowledge. But the UK and report really went heavily into the genetic engineering, which is and they talked about the difference between, you know, germline cell manipulation versus, you know, as the adult and the differences and how this could augment evolution. The whole thing is it's frightening. And that's the truth. It's frightening. And the public does not have an awareness of what this will mean. One of the articles from the military actually talked about how you would have enhanced humans and non-enhanced humans, and that they would have to be very careful because the enhanced humans, there would be a prejudice against non-enhanced humans.
Okay, let's go back to Hollywood, okay? So what they're writing an article on this idea that they are going to start enhancing humans, making bigger, stronger. They can, you know, mentally, telepathically speak to each other. Maybe they can fly.
Enhanced bones. Another would be enhanced bones, you know, so you'd have a stronger skeleton, or adding an exoskeleton that was attached to your body somehow biologically would be another.
Well, so, and this is a terror. I'm not recommending this series to anyone because it is so rated R. I have even a hard time watching it. My husband's into it, but it is a series called The Boys, and the whole series is about future society and this enhanced superhero quote unquote population. They go bad. But they've been injected with what they call Compound V, which was created by a big global pharmaceutical corporation. And that made them, you know, able to fly or to have super strength. And it's the whole series is about the regular non-enhanced humans fighting against trying to thwart the enhanced humans.
Right, and right.
It's insane.
It is insane. But the key there, so one of the keys in that series is what you said, was that this drug was created by a company. Mm. And we now have such regulatory capture of the FDA, which, mm-hmm. you know, controls the drug, both development and manufacturing, and also the biologics. You know, so what happens with the mRNA vaccine? What happens when all of a sudden there's some human enhancement that everybody wants, you know, whether it's safe or not, you know, the ability to talk to your spouse over long distances without a cell phone, just using your mind.
Right. Well,
right. You know, so who doesn't want that? Right. So because of the regulatory, our government may not look at the ethical implications of these technologies. It's, you know, to just approve something because you can is not good enough, you know, well, because we see, you can do it, which is what we've seen with the mRNA vaccines. And just to say that, that's kind of like a gateway drug. Many people feel that these vaccines, and if you go to clinicaltrials.gov and you put an mRNA vaccine, there are over 50 trials right now currently enrolling for mRNA vaccine clinical trials. And these include for meningitis, HIV, influenza. I mean, you name the disease, there's a clinical trial starting. But what that means, because we all know that the regulatory package for the COVID-19 vaccines was, it was frankly not good enough. And, you know, you can go back into the literature. I don't want to take the conversation there necessarily, but what I want to say is there is no way in heck that they've had enough time to do a better regulatory package, which means they have normalized a lot of the stuff with the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines and allowed these new clinical trials to move forward based on that old data package. That is really scary. It scares the heck out of me. And the reason we really know this is because we know that there was a Cell paper that came out in 2022 on the RNA stability that shows that the RNA doesn't break down. There's no way in heck these clinical trials should have proceeded just on that one paper alone.
The regulatory capture, which Jill is alluding to here, essentially the FDA, all of the agencies, the bureaucracy, the government, our politicians, right wing, left wing, they have essentially been captured or purchased by pharmaceutical corporations, massive global banks, and they are now in a symbiotic relationship. The government and the corporations help each other at the expense of the individual human being. It is essentially the definition of fascism. And this is what we are fighting against. And we got to go to break right here. We're going to go to break real quick. And we're going to finish this out in a moment right here on TNT.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Many power grids worldwide are in grave danger of collapse from the growing amount of intermittent power sourced from wind turbines. Covering the countryside and offshore coastal regions with wind turbines is insane. English journalist James Dellingpole has described wind farms as a cancer and that he wants to raise public awareness of just how disastrous these bat-chomping, bird-slicing eco-crucifixes are in every single respect. These remarks nail the reality of wind farms to a T. When the wind doesn't blow, there is no power. And when gale force winds hit, the turbines are shut down. It's a Goldilocks moment. When the winds are just right, the power produced is at an optimum. In reality, industry and households require power 24/7, not just when the wind blows.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
Sometimes it makes me feel embarrassed if there's somebody that says, hey, what did you do that for and stuff? Well, one of them is where I shake my head to get my hair out of my eyes. There's another one where I sort of do like a little squeaking in my throat. There used to be another one where I had to spell every word that I hear. I don't notice it when I'm playing football or concentrating on something like that. Tourette's syndrome is a neurological disorder that affects thousands of Australians. It is characterized by involuntary movements and vocal noises called tics. We can't help it, and we're just like you in every other way. People with Tourette's just want to be understood and accepted.
So visit Tourette.org.au to help us help those with Tourette's.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the final segment, joined by the absolutely brilliant Dr. Jill Malone. She is the other half of Dr. Robert Malone. And I think this is one of the very first interviews that you've done. I'm really excited to introduce you to this audience and your work. Most people don't know that much of what you see, almost everything you see on that Substack of Dr. Malone is coming from you, and that you guys are bouncing.
Well, no, I write about 50% and he writes 50%. So awesome. It's pretty much 50-50.
Awesome. But I love it. We're discussing transhumanism. We were talking about regulatory capture in the last segment. I had to cut you off.
And just to say it, Congress passed a law that said that the fees that pharmaceutical companies pay for drug clinical trials and for the FDA labor, that now the pharmaceutical companies have to pay fees to the FDA. But what's that's created? Okay, that sounds good, right? Right. The government isn't paying. That is basically the way it was set up is the pharmaceutical company pays for this specific clinical trial. Well, everybody in the FDA working on that clinical trial now, their salary is tied to that pharmaceutical company. So, and not only that, but their future jobs are also, because this has become their area of expertise. And if that clinical trial is successful, then they can get hired for double the amount of money to the pharmaceutical company. So it has created a conflict of interest within the FDA that is enormous. And somehow this has to be broken.
It absolutely does. You have really just this apparatus that has been built. And I guess you could generalize it as an elite, kind of a corporate, governmental, non-governmental organization, public-private partnership. You could call it a not-for-profit or a foundation, but it is this, this is where the upper echelon of everyone, in the world, the 1%, where they trade contracts and they trade beneficial pieces of legislation and tax policies. And it's essentially them against us. Right.
Yes. And so, as Mussolini used to say, another word for fascism is corporatism.
Sure.
So people like to bandy around the word fascism, but fascism has a strong element of the government and corporations, special corporations working together. And this is where we are right now. So, the Democrats, Republicans, doesn't matter what side, our government right now has a large problem with corporatism or fascism. And really it's up to Congress to solve this.
Well, and I think also we, the people, this is where I love, Aldous Huxley and this idea of decentralization, a movement for freedom that is completely unique to every locality. Right. In the United States of America and Australia, it's an understanding of human dignity and the human spirit and freedom and liberty and human beings taking responsibility for that from their own corner of the world. And then
we see it in religious communities that, that one of the things about the people who are resistant to taking this vaccine, again and again, you find religious communities behind them. But, we also see it in kind of other areas too, the Amish.
Sure.
Okay? A very successful local group within our government. Okay. Certain Native American tribes or nations have resisted the federal government. So it's not that, even to the level of people, there are people who for 30 years religiously go to farmers markets and avoid buying processed foods and foods from the grocery store. Okay. So we have these communities And they may not be government communities, but we have them, and they're strong, and they have a tradition. And I think the key to not being isolated in all this is to find community.
Mm. I agree 100%. Steve Dace, one of my buddies over at The Blaze, has encouraged Americans to become ungovernable in certain ways, right? Understanding our Constitution, understanding the boundaries that our Constitution has placed around our government systems, especially our federal government, and embracing really the idea of the founders, which was to have citizens govern themselves through very strong and robust local organizations like your Locust Club and your Rotary and your public school district. And
recognizing, I totally agree with you, and also recognizing when your government is untenable. In this country, we can move. Okay, we are a set of states that are bound by some federal laws. But if you just are finding, whether you live in New York or California, that you just, it's impeding too much on your individual freedoms, you can pick up and choose to live elsewhere. And I think that's, migration is another tool in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do, just as an anecdotal, I've been an evangelist for localism for almost a decade. I've been doing my broadcast radio show. I did my deep dive into all of this around the Common Core battle. That's where I learned. That's when the scales fell from my eyes. And I began to see this apparatus within the scope of the education system. And it astounded me, right? As we were battling this almost a decade ago, and I would go and I would talk to school administrators and school board members and leadership teams, and they would say, well, we have to do this. We have to do this because of X, Y, and Z. And there weren't any laws in place. It was because they accepted a grant. It was
exactly.
So the federal government said, hey, you can have a $40,000 grant, but you
what
have
the Department of Education has done to control education in this country is... But I also think,
but they could say no.
This is also in my mind. Language, right now there's this thing about book banning, as opposed to insisting that there's age-appropriate material
right
in our libraries.
Right.
If by letting them control the dialogue, we can lose the fight.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be sure that we're using language that conveys what we actually mean, and not allowing the other side, and that includes the globalists in this case, to use language and win the argument.
Oh, yeah. Controlling the language and the dialogue is the first step. It's the key in winning the argument, because
you can see that with the going back to the cyborg versus human enhancement.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
And human enhancement may be something as simple as cataracts surgery, right? Where you're getting your cataracts removed and new artificial lenses put in.
Well, we like that.
We like that, right? It's a good thing. But, and fixing the disabled veteran, of course, that's a good thing. Mm. The question is that slippery slope. And who's going to decide what, and who's going to decide when you talk about human augmentation and gene manipulation, who's going to decide that for our children? Mm. And you can see right now with the fad with transgenders, how children can be manipulated.
And how quickly they moved to that. We were discussing in the break, I wondered, 10 years ago, this new obsession with transgenderism, where is this coming? A lot of people were perplexed by that. It was such a radical departure from basic human nature of boy versus girl. Very, very obvious differences between boys and girls. And so it really struck me in a lot of people. And I do think now, looking back over 10 years, I think it was a precursor. It was, kind of the pre-promotion or the warming us up for this concept.
Absolutely. And it is being driven by large corporations too. They are making the hospitals are making a huge amount of money. Physicians, physician practices, and also drug companies, because the drugs that they are giving to these young children, for instance, the puberty blockers, they are on patent, they are expensive drugs, and they're using them in ways that were not intended, which many drugs are used for that. I'm not criticizing that, but a lot of these drugs, there are black box warnings on these are dangerous drugs. They should not, you know, the label says they should not be given long-term, for instance, the puberty blockers,
yeah,
because they cause osteoporosis. And you know, these children, they may, you know, this is a little frank, but they may never orgasm. Mm. If you're on these puberty blockers, you know, it stops you from proceeding sexually. And if you're on them too long, you know, well, the consequences are really terrible.
Well, and this is, you know, what I tell my audience, and we're going to have to go soon, in this new future, right? It is a global plan implemented locally, and you, the human being, we are the consumer, the product, and the experiment. That is, yes, the vision for the 21st century economy. Yes. It's
us. Parents out there, educate your children.
Yeah,
Do not allow the schools to do it for you.
Absolutely. Dr. Jill Malone, thank you. This is so interesting. I'm so glad to have been able to introduce you.
It's been fun.
To my audience, and you're going to have to come back again, right?
I will do so. Thank you. Thank
you. Who is Robert Malone? Is the Substack?
Yeah. Who is Robert Malone? Yeah,
who is Robert Malone? And you can.
And it's rwmalonemd.substack.com.
Yeah. It's a must read for me. And I'm signed up for the email alerts as well. So I recommend that you all do that as well. Thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all again right here on TNT.